Osho, my way, the way of the white clouds. Discourse number 12, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India.
With excuses not to follow what you said to the letter, things like, well, the master wouldn't know what the conditions are like now, or he doesn't realize what things are like in the West. Should we follow everything the master says to the letter, or are there times when we should use our discretion?
You should follow either absolutely or not at all. No compromise should be made, because anything half-hearted is not only useless but harmful, because anything half-hearted divides you. That's the harm. You should remain an undivided unity. So either surrender totally, then there is no need to think on your part. Then follow blindly. I emphasize the word blindly, as if you have no eyes. Somebody who has eyes is leading you. Then you will remain an undivided unity. An undivided, integrated, you will grow. Or, if you feel this is impossible, and this cannot be done, then don't follow at all. Then completely follow yourself. Then too you will remain undivided. To remain undivided is the end, the aim. And both will do. The same will be the ultimate results. If you can be alone without a master, if you can follow your own consciousness wheresoever it leads, it is the same. The same will be the result. So it depends on you. But the mind always says, do both. The mind says, follow the master, but think about it. Follow only those things which you think right. Then where is the following? Where is the surrender? If you are the judge, and you are to decide what to follow and what not to follow, then where is the surrender? Where is the trust? Then it is better to follow your own consciousness. But don't deceive. At least there will be no deception. Otherwise, you go on following yourself and you think that you are following a master. If you are the deciding factor, if you have to choose, if you have to discard something, accept something, then you are following yourself. But you can create the impression around yourself and you can deceive yourself that you are following a master. Then nothing will be the outcome of it. You will not grow. Because through deception there can be no growth. And you will get more and more confused. Because if you are capable of deciding what is to be done and what is not to be done, if you have to choose from your master's guidance, you will create a chaos. Because whenever a master guides you, his guidance has an organic unity about it. Every instruction is related to another. It is a compact whole. You cannot discard something and follow something. You will become a ruin, a wreck. Even a single thing denied, then the whole has been disturbed. You don't know how things are interrelated. So this is my suggestion to you. Remain a unit, undivided. Decide, if you have to decide, then decide that I will follow myself. Then don't surrender. There is no need also. This is what Krishnamurti has been saying for these 40, 50 years continuously. Don't follow. People can reach without following anybody. But the path is arduous and very long, because no help which can be given to you, you are ready to accept. No guidance which is possible and which can cut many unnecessary difficulties on the path. This is what Krishnamurti has been saying. Nobody has done it also. This is the problem of the mind. The mind can accept this, not because it has understood, but because it is very ego-fulfilling not to follow anybody. Nobody wants to follow anybody. Deep down the ego rests. So around Krishnamurti, all the egoists have gathered. They are again deceiving themselves. They think they are not following anybody because they have understood the fallacies of following. They have understood that the path has to be traveled alone. They have understood that no help is possible. Nobody can help you. Nobody can guide you. Alone you have to travel. They think that they have understood this. That's why they are not following anybody. That is not the real thing. They are deceiving. They are not following because their ego won't allow. And still they go on listening to Krishnamurti. For years together, they go again and again. If no help is possible, why you go again and again to Krishnamurti? If nobody can guide you, what is the point of listening to him again and again? It is pointless. And even this attitude, that you have to travel the path alone, is not discovered by you. It has been revealed to you by Krishnamurti. Deep down, he has become your master. But you go on saying that I don't follow. This is a deception. The same deception can happen from the reverse side. You come to me. You think you have surrendered. And still you go on choosing. Something I say, if it suits you, that means if it suits your ego. you follow it. Something I say which doesn't suit to your ego, you start rationalizing that this may not be for me. So you feel that you have surrendered and you have not surrendered. People around Krishnamurti think they are not following anybody and they are following. You around me think you are following me and you are not following. Mind is always a deceiver. Wherever you go, it will deceive you. It can deceive you. So be alert. I say to you, you can reach without following. But the path will be very, very lonely, very long, bound to be so. But one can reach. It is not impossible. People have reached. I myself have reached through not following. You can also reach. But remember that not following should not become an ego fulfillment. Otherwise, you will never reach. The master or no master, that is not the basic thing. The basic thing is the ego, your ego. No ego. Then even without a master you can reach. With ego, even a Buddha cannot lead you. So either follow totally or don't follow totally, but be total. So it is for you. Remain undeceived by the mind and look deep within yourself. Be aware what you are doing. If you are surrendering, then surrender. I remember it happened once with a group in Gurdjieff's life. He was working with few disciples. Absolute surrender was needed. And Gurdjieff has said that whatsoever he says, they have to follow. And he was helping them to practice a certain exercise. He used to call that exercise a stop exercise. So whenever he says stop, you have to stop whatsoever you are doing. You were walking, your 1 foot was above the ground, and he says stop. You have to stop there. You were talking and your mouth was open, and he says stop. You have to stop with the open mouth. You are not to change it. You are not to make your posture convenient, because that will be a deception, and you are not deceiving anybody except yourself. One day, suddenly in the morning, when people were doing some exercise out the camp, out his tent, few people were passing through a canal that was running by. He suddenly said stop, and he was inside the camp. So people stopped. 4 persons were passing the canal. It was dry, the water was not running, so they stopped. But suddenly somebody opened the canal and the water started coming. So they started to think what to do, because Gurdjieff is inside the tent. He does not know that they are standing in a canal and the canal is flowing. But they waited, because mind can wait up to a moment. When the water came up to their necks, one jumped out. He said, this is too much. He does not know. Then the canal was flooded more. 2 others jumped when the water came just near their nose, because now they will be drowned. And the rationalization was simple and easy, you would have also done the same. Because they are going to die, and the master is inside the tent and he doesn't know. Only one remained, and the water was flowing above his head and he was standing. Then Gurdjieff rushed out of his tent, brought him out of the kennel. He was almost unconscious. The water had to be brought out of his body. He was just on the death point. But when he opened his eyes, he was another man. The old man really died. This was a transformation. He was totally different. What happened in that moment of death? He accepted the master. He rejected his own mind and the rationalizations. He rejected his own life lust. He rejected his own inmost biological urge to survive. He rejected everything. He said, when the master has said stop, I have stopped. Now nothing can move me. It must have been very, very difficult, almost impossible. But when you do the impossible, you are transformed. Dying, he will not allow the mind to interfere. Death was there, but he accepted death rather than accepting his own mind and judgment. He was never the same man again. Nobody ever met the old man. And then others realize that they have missed a great opportunity. The three who have jumped out of the river, out of the canal, missed a great opportunity. This is total surrender. It is not a question whether it is appealing to your mind or not, whether your mind says yes or not. When you surrender, you have surrendered all possibility of saying no. Whatsoever the situation, you will not say no. The total yes means surrender. Difficult. That's why transformation is difficult. Not easy. That's why spiritual birth is not easy. But I don't say that you cannot reach alone. You can reach alone. You can reach with a master. You can reach in a group. You can reach as an individual. All the possibilities are open. I am neither for this nor for that. It is for you to decide, and decide without any deception. And remember, it is not a question of East and West. The mind is the same, deep down. All the differences are superficial. Eastern and Western, these are just surfaces, cultural, racial impressions, but they are on the surface. Deep down, the human mind is the same. From where you come is irrelevant. Surrender are remain absolutely alone, but both the paths can be traveled only by persons who are total. alone, Buddha reached enlightenment. Following Buddha, many reached the same enlightenment. I am not partisan. I don't say, as Krishnamurti says, that only this is the way. I don't say, as Meher Baba says, only this is the way. And I know well why they say only this is the way. To help you. Because once you become aware that the other can also be the way, confusion starts in you. Then you start swaying. Sometimes you think this, sometimes you think that. That's why masters have been saying only this is the way, just to make your mind unconfused. Otherwise the opposite will also attract you, and you will go on changing your standpoint to make you total. Masters go on emphasizing, but I say both are the ways. Why? Because that emphasis has become old, and you have heard too much about this is the only way, that it has become a dead glitch. It doesn't help now. It used to help in the past. It cannot help now, because the world has become so one. The earth has become just a global village. And every religion is known to every other religion. And all the paths have become known. Now humanity is acquainted with all the paths, all the paths, all the possibilities, all the alternatives. In the past, people knew only one path, the path they were born in. It was good to emphasize that this is the only way, to make their mind confident about it, trusting about it. But now, this is not the situation at all. A Hindu reads Quran. A Christian comes to India to seek guidance. A Mohammedan is aware of Gita and Vedas. All the paths have become known. Much confusion exists. And whosoever says that this is the only path is not going to help now. Because you know other paths are there. And you also know that from other paths people have reached and are reaching. Hence, I don't emphasize any path. You can take my help if you surrender. You can take my help if you don't surrender. But you have to be clear about it. If you choose the path of surrender, then you have to follow me totally. If you choose that I am not going to surrender, then decide it. I can be a friend on the path. There is no need for me to make a master. I can be just a friend on the path, or not even a friend. I can be just, you are searching, and somebody absolutely unknown you meet, a stranger, and you ask him, where is the river and which path leads to the river. And when he has said, you thank him and you move. I can be just an stranger. No need even to be a friend, because with friend also you get involved. You can take my help. My help is unconditional. I don't say do this, then I will help you. I don't say surrender only, then I will help you. But as this much I must say, that do whatsoever you like, but do it totally. If you are total, the transformation is closer. If you are divided, it is almost impossible.
Someone, Waku, saw a picture of the bearded Bodhisattva and he complained, "Why hasn't that fellow got a beard?" Bhagwan, why don't you have a beard?
The tradition of Zen is really beautiful. Bodhidharma has got a beard. And the disciple asks, why this fellow has not got a beard? The question is beautiful, but only a Zen disciple can raise it. Because the beard belongs to the body, not to Bodhidharma. That fellow is beardless. Because body is just an abode. Apparently, the question looks absurd. But it is meaningful. And such questions have been asked many times. Buddha continuously talked, morning, evening, afternoon, this village, that village, moving 40 years, continuously talking. And one day, Sariputta asked, why you have remained silent? Why don't you talk to us? Patently absurd. And Buddha laughed and said, you are right. And this man was talking. Nobody has talked so much as Buddha. But Sariputta is right. Because this talking has happened only on the surface and Buddha has remained silent. One Zen monk, Rinpoche, used to say that this man Buddha was never born. He never walked on this earth. He never died. He is just a dream. And every day he will go in the temple and bow down before Buddha's statue. Then somebody asked, Rinpoche, you are just mad. Every day you go on insisting that this man was never born, never died, never walked on in this earth, and still you go to the temple and bow down. Rinpoche said, because this man was never born, never walked on this earth, never died, that's why I go and bow down. The questioner persisted that we can't follow you. Either you are mad, or we are mad, but we cannot follow you. What do you mean? And Bodhidharma, this Rinpoche said, that the birth of this man was just a dream to him. Walking on this earth was just a dream to him. Death was not real to him, just an end of a long dream. And this man, the center of his being remained beyond birth, beyond death. It is said that Buddha always remained in his seventh heaven. He never came down. Only his reflection was here. And this is true. This is true for you also. You have never come down, only the reflection. But you have become so identified with the reflection, you have forgotten. You think that you have come down. You cannot come down. From your being, there is no way to fall down. But you can look into a river and you can see the reflection. And you can become so identified with it that you can think that you are underwater. And you can suffer because of it. You can feel suffocated. And you can feel now you are going to die. And you are always standing on the bank and you have never come down the water. You cannot come. So I say to you, not only Buddha, nobody has come down from the seventh heaven, ever. But few people get obsessed, identified with their reflections. This is what Hindus say, the world of Maya, the world of reflections. We remain in the Brahma. We remain in the ultimate reality rooted there. Eternally, nobody ever comes down. But we can get identified with the reflection, with the dream. So you are right asking me, this fellow is also beardless. If you look at my body, you are not looking at me. If you look at me, then you will understand. The beard cannot grow on a soul. The beard can grow only on the body. And this beard is really very symbolic. Soul is life. Body is half dead and half alive. Beard is almost dead. Your hairs are dead part of your body. That's why you can cut them and you don't feel any pain. Cut your fingers. You will feel pain. Your hairs are part of your body, but you cut them, you don't feel any pain. They are dead cells of the body. So sometimes it happens that in a graveyard, if you go to a Mohammedan graveyard and dig a body, the man may have died beardless, but there will be beard now. Even on dead bodies, beards can grow. Because beards are dead, just dead cells. It is good to grow a beard. Because then standing before a mirror, you can see all the three layers of you. The completely dead. Half dead, half alive, and absolutely alive. Beard is the material, the matter. Body is matter and spirit meeting. The meeting is always difficult. But body is just a meeting ground of matter and spirit. Whenever the meeting breaks, the balance is lost. You are dead. Matter reabsorbed in matter. Spirit reabsorbed in spirit. This fellow is also beardless. The whole question is, why Bodhidharma is not matter? And the answer is, because spirit cannot be matter. But Zen disciples ask in a peculiar way. Nowhere else such questions can be asked. You cannot ask a Christian Pope, why this fellow Jesus is beardless? The very question will be thought profane. You cannot be so intimate with Jesus. You cannot call him this guy or this fellow. That will not look holy. Your behavior will look insulting, but not so with Zen. Zen says, if you love your masters, you can laugh about them. If you love them, there cannot be any fear, even the fear of a man who is holy. If you love them, fear disappears. So when for the first time Christian theologians became aware of the tradition of Zen, they couldn't believe that such type of religion can exist. Because Zen monks go on laughing about Buddha. Sometimes they use such words you cannot believe. They can say, this is stupid fellow. For Buddha. And if you ask them, they will say, yes, he was stupid, because he was trying to say something which cannot be said. And he was trying to transform us who are impossible. He was a stupid fellow. He was trying to do the impossible. Zen masters have used such terms and words which no religion can use. But because of that, I see that no religion is so religious as Zen. Because if you really love, where is the fear? You can joke. You can laugh. And an enlightenment like Buddha will laugh with you. There is no problem. He will not feel hurt. If he feels hurt, he is not enlightened at all. And he will not say, don't use such profane language. Because for Buddha, all language is profane. Only silence is sacred. So whether you call him a stupid fellow or one who has awakened, both are same for him. Language as such is profane, only silence is holy. So whatsoever you say is the same. This disciple asking, why this fellow Bodhidharma has not got a beard? Bodhidharma is the first master of Zen. Bodhidharma created this ever-flowing, ever-renewing river of Zen. Bodhidharma went to China 1400 years before. When he entered China, he was carrying one of his shoes on his head. One shoe was in his feet, one shoe on his head. The emperor had come to receive him. He became embarrassed. What manner of man? And he was waiting so much. And he was thinking, a great holy man, a great saint and sage is coming. And this man is behaving like a buffoon. He was disturbed. The emperor felt uneasy. And the first opportunity he got, he asked Bodhidharma, what you are doing? People are laughing. And they are laughing at me also that I have come to receive you. And the way you have behaved is not a way to behave. You should behave like a saint. Bodhidharma said, only those who are not saints behave like saints. I am a saint. Only those who are not saints behave like saints, and he is true. Because you care about your behavior only when it is not spontaneous. The emperor said, and I cannot understand this carrying one shoe on the head. You appear like a buffoon. Bodhidharma said, yes, because all that can be seen is buffoonery. Only the unseen. You're standing here like an emperor, robed in a special dress, crowned, is buffoonery. And just to say this to you, I was carrying one shoe on my head. This all is acting in buffoonery. The real is not there on the periphery. Look at me, not look at my body. And this is very symbolic, he said, that I carry one shoe on my head. I say that in life nothing is sacred and nothing is profane. Even a shoe is as much sacred as your head. I carry this shoe as a symbol. It is said the emperor was impressed. But he said, you are too much. Just one thing he said, I wanted to ask you, and that is how to put my mind at ease. I am so impatient, so disturbed, uneasy. Bodhidharma said, come in the morning at 4 o'clock. And bring your mind with you, and I will put it at ease. The emperor could not follow. He started thinking what he means this man. Bring your mind with you. When he was getting down the steps of the temple where Bodhidharma was staying, Bodhidharma again said, remember, don't come alone, otherwise whom I will put at ease? Bring the mind with you, and at 4 o'clock, and alone, no guards, nobody else with you. The whole night the king couldn't sleep, and he was thinking, this man seems to be a little crazy. When I will be there, my mind is obviously with me. So what is this insistence? Bring your mind with you. Sometimes he thought it is better not to go, because who knows, alone this man may start beating or something. And you cannot believe, you cannot predict this man. But at last he decided, because the man was really magnetic. He had something in his eyes, a fire which doesn't belong to this earth. He had something in his breath, a silence which comes from beyond. So the emperor came as if hypnotized, and the first thing Bodhidharma asked, okay, so you have come, where is your mind? And he was sitting there with a big staff. The king said, but when I have come, my mind has come with me. It is inside me. It is nothing like a thing I can carry. So Bodhidharma said, okay, so you think the mind is within you. Then sit and close your eyes and try to find out where it is. You just point it to me and I will put it at right. This staff is there and I'm going to make your mind silent. You don't worry. The emperor closed his eyes and tried to look, and Bodhidharma sitting just before him. He tried and tried and tried, and time passed, and then there was sun rising, and his face was absolutely silent. And then he opened his eyes, and Bodhidharma was sitting there, and Bodhidharma asked, could you find? The emperor started laughing, and he said, you have put it right. Because the more I try to find it, the more I feel it is not there. It was just a shadow. And it was there because I never penetrated within. It was just my absence. I became present inside and it disappeared. This Bodhidharma is really a very rare being. His disciples could joke about him, laugh about him. He enjoyed it. An enlightened person is a continuous laughter. He is not a serious man, as ordinarily thought. Wherever you see seriousness, know well something is wrong. Because seriousness is part of a diseased being. No flower is serious unless it is ill. No bird is serious unless it is ill. No tree is serious unless something is wrong. Whenever something is wrong, seriousness happens. Seriousness is illness. Whenever everything is okay, a laughter arises. Bodhidharma is continuously laughing, and his laughter is a belly laughter, an uproar. His disciples used to ask questions nobody except Bodhidharma can answer. And I told you that fellow was without a beard. And this fellow is also without a beard. Anything more?
Asking a question of you is like grappling with a Zen koan. Gosho said, when you meet a Zen master on the road, you cannot talk to him, and you cannot be with him in silence. What are you to do? When we meet the master of masters on the lawn, what to do?
Yes, it is true. When you meet a Zen master on the road, you cannot talk with him. Because what you can talk with him? Your worlds are so different. Your languages belong to two different dimensions. What you can talk with him? What can you ask? Is really any question worth asking? Is really any question meaningful? When you meet a Zen master, what you will talk? All that you can talk belongs to this world. This mundane world. The market, the house, the family. All that you can talk, all that you are, is so futile. It is true, when you meet a Zen master on the road, and you always meet a master on the road because the master is always moving. You never meet him anywhere else. Remember, you always meet a master on the road because he is always moving. He is like a river, never static, never standing. If you cannot move with him, you will miss him. He is always on his feet. You always meet him on the road. What you can talk to him? And you cannot also be silent. Because to be silent is almost impossible for you. You cannot talk because the master belongs to a different world. You cannot be silent because the world you belong is never silent. Your mind goes on chattering. Your mind is a constant chatterbox. Consistent, inconsistent thoughts go on and on and on, and there is no end to it. And they move in a wheel. You cannot be silent and you cannot talk. Then what to do? If you start talking, it will be absurd. If you start being silent, it will not be possible. It is better not to decide on your part. Ask the master what to do. Tell him I cannot talk because we belong to different worlds, and whatsoever I ask will be useless. And whatsoever you can answer, I cannot question. And whatsoever I question is useless. It is not even worth answering. And I cannot be silent. Because I don't know what silence is. I have never known it. Silence has never happened to me. I know a sort of silence. The silence that comes between two thoughts, just as a gap. The silence that exists between two worlds, just as a gap. Our silence is just like peace, which happens between two wars. It is not really peace. It is just a preparation for another war. How it can be a peace which bridges two wars? The war simply goes underground, that's all. It is a cold war. It is never peace. Our silence is like that. So tell the master that I cannot be silent, and I cannot talk, so tell me what to do. Don't start anything on your own, because whatsoever you start will be wrong. Talk or silence, whatsoever you start will be wrong. Just leave everything to the master and ask him what I am to do. If he says talk, then talk. If he says be silent, then try to be silent. And he knows, and he will ask only that which is possible to you. He will ask ultimately the impossible, but never in the beginning. He will ask in the end the impossible also, because then it will also would have become possible. But in the beginning he will ask only the possible. And by and by he will push you towards the ultimate abyss where impossible happens. If he says talk, then talk. Then even your talking will be a hell. But then you are not really asking, just talking as a catharsis. You are bringing your mind out. You are acting your mind out. You are opening yourself. You are not asking, exposing. This exposure will help. You will be relieved of much burden. And when a master is near you, if you can be really frank and talk all that comes to you, irrelevant, inconsistent, not bothering about you, not managing and manipulating it. When a master is near you, if you can talk totally whatsoever comes to your mind, it will become a gibberish. If you don't manage, it will be like madman. But when a master is near you, if you are frank, honest and true, and bring your mind out, the master will penetrate you from the back door. From the front door your mind is going out, from the back door the master is entering you. So when near me on the lawn, be sincere and true. Don't bring questions which are intellectual. They are useless. Metaphysics is the most useless thing in the world. Don't bring any metaphysical questions. They are not true. They don't belong to you. You may have heard about them, read about them, but they are not part of you. Bring your nonsense out, whatsoever it is. And don't try to manipulate it. Don't try to rationalize it and polish it. Let it be as raw as possible. Because before a master you must be naked. You should not wear clothes and you should not hide yourself. But that is an exposure. And if you can talk as an exposure, not as an inquiry, just opening your heart, not asking for anything, then silence will follow. Because when you have exposed your mind and you have passed through a catharsis, silence comes to you. And this is a different type of silence, not a silence forced, not a silence controlled, not a silence with any effort on your part. But when you have exposed your mind completely, released all that is there, a silence comes, descends on you, overwhelms you. A silence which is beyond understanding, and a silence which is beyond you. A silence which belongs to the whole and not to the individual. Then you can be both. With a Zen master on the road, now you can talk also and you can be silent also. Enough?